This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
I've basically been at the gym for like 16 years. 16 years as a fighter, now as a trainer. Every other gym is like a business venture. Bed-Stuy Gym is more like a family, you know what I'm saying? At times, you know, I get fed up. I say, I'm going to leave this gym. See, it's hard to leave this gym. We don't have a lot of equipment. We don't have a lot of glamour. We done came from the no heat to some heat, from no light to some light, the pocket missing off the pants. Sometimes the guy that don't have it, he's hungry because he's trying to get it.
Every day we walk the same street, the same corner, the smell.
That was my guest, Harry Kite, speaking about the work he does as a boxing trainer at the Bed-Stuy Boxing Center in Brooklyn. What we heard is an excerpt from the new documentary On the Ropes. The film was made by Nanette Burstein and Brett Morgan. Burstein trained at the Bed-Stuy Boxing Center before deciding to make the movie. The film follows Kite and three of his young boxers from 1996 to 98. Two of them, Tyrene Manson and Noel Santiago, are shown preparing for the 1997 Golden Gloves tournament. The third, George Walton, won the tournament in 1996. Here's Kite ringside, coaching Santiago.
What's our slogan?
Best I do or die.
What's our slogan?
Best I do or die.
We do?
Best I do or die.
We do, we don't die.
We do, we don't die.
That's right.
I'm scared of you.
You know what? I'm glad you didn't fight like you never fought before. Fight like you fight Mike Tyson. Fight like you fight me in the ring.
Even if the head is there, don't head hunt all the time.
Look back. You know what I'm saying? You know my specialty. Body shots.
Body what is body?
Where is body? Where
boom,
is
body?
Boom,
shots
boom.
Shots
that jab.
Well, who the man?
Try to put your name in the papers.
Who the man, Noel?
Say what's
all right, now do the thing.
What did boxing mean to you when you were young and first started training?
It meant everything to me back then because I've tried like basketball, football, and stuff like that, and it didn't work out for me. And so when I got into boxing, like, you know, I fell in love with the sport, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I was the center of attention, and it wasn't the whole team, and it wasn't nothing like that. It was all about me. And so, like, you know, the boxing gig, almost like, you know, you almost like be a parent to that kid because you get the attention that sometimes you don't get at home. You get that personal attention. You get that loving kid, and you get all of that.
Let's talk a little bit more about what boxing means to you. I know you had started a pro career in about 1980, and you worked for several months as Muhammad Ali's sparring partner. But then your career got, professional boxing career was basically ended when you were convicted on drug charges and attempted murder. I think you served 4 years in Sing Sing and Attica. Well, you shot your cousin 7 times. What happened? What was that about?
It was one of the down parts of my life, and I was I was selling drugs, and he had robbed a place, and I just, you know, I just got stupid, you know what I'm saying? I done a bad thing, and I did that. At the time, you know, I didn't think like that. And at the time, I thought, you know, I was a man, and I was a king in the street and stuff like that. And so when I did that, you know, it didn't hit me until after the fact. It didn't hit me until I was laying up when I was in that 8x4, laying in that prison cell and thinking, and all the thoughts started coming through me. I started having nightmares and stuff like that. And that's when I know I made a bad mistake. I made a terrible mistake.
And when you got out of prison after serving your 4 years, I think you were homeless for a while.
Yeah, I got caught up in a drug game, and I started from selling drugs. I started using drugs, and one thing led to another, and I, you know, became homeless on the street, not washing, eating out of the garbage can, you know, and I just walked around the street just like aimlessly for like 3 to 4 years, and I was directionless, didn't have no sense of purpose, no sense of being, you know, just I was just out there, and it took me a while, you know, it took me a while. I had to go into a drug program to get my life back in order. And so when I did that, after I completed the drug program, and I told myself, because the drug program was hard, and I said, once I get out of this, once I graduated from the drug program, and I promised myself, and I promised God I would never, ever use drug again a day in my life.
How did you figure out that what you really wanted to do was train young boxers?
Oh, like, when I, my first young fighter, because I was training, I I made an attempt to make a comeback. And
oh, really? After you started boxing again?
Yeah, I made an attempt to make a comeback. When I came back to the gym, like after the drill program, I started training again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got with this guy, right? And I signed a contract to fight for him. But like, you know, it takes, when you're out of the game for a long time, it takes a good while for you to get your body and mind back in shape. And so like after 6 months, and I was like out for like 4 years, he wanted me to fight, and I felt I wasn't ready. So he kept bugging me. So I said, man, listen, forget about it. I'm not fighting. So I took on the first kid. I started training him, a kid by the name of Eric Kelly. I started training him, and he became my first champion. He was a young kid, junior Olympic champion. I started training him, and then I started liking it because, you know, now I was on the other side of the fence. And then being on that side of the fence felt good. You know, now I felt like I really meant something, not just a boxer just getting in the ring and stuff like that. I had a purpose for being. And so when I got into, you know, when I started training fight, that made me feel good about myself. And that gave me more of a reason not to go back to draws again, because now I said, nah, this is what I want to do. This is going to be my job.
You said when you were younger, you really thought of yourself as, you know, king of the street, and that ended up getting you into a lot of trouble. Are there certain attitudes that you try to change in the young boxers who you're trying to mold?
Yeah, because sometimes you have to. Sometimes you get a fight, they come in the gym cocky. They come in the gym with a bad attitude. Some of them come in the gym, you know, with a lot of confidence. Some of them come in the gym with no confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to first get a person to believe in themselves. You know what I'm saying? A lot of, in boxing is a sport where the majority of people that come to box doesn't believe in themselves, you know. They got a self-esteem problem. And what you want to do, you want to build on that. You want to try to build them up. And that's what we work on at now. We're just not there to teach a person to be a good fighter, because it's not about being a good fighter. It's about being a good human being.
Now, at the beginning of the film, you're working with a young boxer named Noel Santiago. He's a welterweight who seems very promising, but lacks self-confidence, and I think also probably lacks a little bit of discipline. And you say to him early in the film, you say, for the next couple of weeks, put your life in my hands. What did you want him to do by putting his life in your hands for that couple of weeks?
I mean, just relax. Trust me, you know what I'm saying? Until you learn to believe in yourself, believe in me for a minute. And if you can believe in me, then you can start to believe in yourself. And that's what the message I was trying to get across to him. If you can believe in anybody, because most people that doesn't have self-esteem doesn't believe in anything, you know what I'm saying? And in the majority of them believe in the wrong thing, and the wrong people. They believe in the next door drug dealer who driving the Lexus, who driving the brand new car of that year. You know what I'm saying? They believe in those kind of people, and those kind of people is not going nowhere fast. And so, and if I can just get him to believe in anything, you know what I'm saying? Believe in something greater than the street, you know, and or believe in, get to just believe in me just for a moment, and say, believe that I can help you.
Obviously, you want your boxers to win, but they're not always going to win. What do you try to teach your boxers about losing and how to handle losing?
I tell a fighter like this: train hard, train very hard. If you lose, you know what I'm saying? Lose because the guy was better than you that day. Don't lose because you shortchange yourself by not doing all that you can do, not doing all the necessary running that it takes, not doing all the push-ups that it takes, not doing everything that you know you should have done to try to win. And that's what I try to get across to him. And after you get beat because the guy was better than you, and don't get beat for no other reason.
The most successful of your boxers in the movie On the Ropes is George Walton, who won the Golden Gloves, and also won the Empire State Games, and was in the Eastern, I think was a finalist in the Eastern Olympic Trials, is that right?
Eastern Region, Olympic Trials, yeah.
Now, he started fighting professionally while the film was being made, and in the film, you warn him that a lot of the people who manage professional boxers exploit them. What were your fears about what would happen to him?
Because George when you get a fighter, right, and they first come to the gym, people doesn't pay attention to them. They wait for a while. They see what how you gonna mold them, what they gonna look like. Then when they start really looking real good and promising, then everybody can have advice for them. And I talked to my fighters about that, and I talked to George about that. They know when you get good right now, nobody ain't paying attention to you, but when you get real good, everybody gonna have some advice for you. And all of a sudden, the person who trained you doesn't know a thing. And they got to him, and they told him that, you know, I didn't know much. And he didn't know that, and he didn't realize that he only got to where he got because of what I taught him. And one thing led to another. The guys came around with the money, with the suits, dying them, taking them to different places. And one thing led to another, he was gone.
How did you feel about him breaking his relationship with you?
I mean, it wasn't a good feeling at all. You know, when you've been with a person, you've been part of their life for so long, and they done told you all kind of different things, and now one thing led to another, and you all break apart because of some outside interference, you know, who really have nothing to do with you. You know, it's a hurting feeling, but I mean, what can you do? You just got to move on and keep going.
You know, in the film, in the documentary, you say that you didn't want to be cut out, but if his management did cut you out, you wanted his managers to buy you out. In some ways, I felt you were kind of putting this young boxer on the spot by encouraging him to stick with you when he was, by other people, being encouraged to go with people who had more experience handling professional boxers.
No, I wasn't really putting him on the spot because, like this, if you're going to go to a doctor, right, you're not going to go to a bicycle specialist to get heart surgery. You're going to go to somebody who know what they're doing. You're going to go to a specialist. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And the people that was trying to manage him didn't know a thing about boxing. They was in the music industry. You know, and music and boxing, they both is the entertainment business, but it's different kind of entertainment. And music and boxing is two different things. And if you don't know what you're doing, all you're going to do is screw up.
Well, during the movie, we see this young boxer, George Walton, ending up feeling like he's being exploited by his new management. He was getting a salary, but they were keeping the purses, and he didn't feel like he was getting a share take of the money for his wins. What was the outcome? What's George Walton doing now?
Right now, he's living in Florida, Orlando, Florida. He continued fighting. He's not with the people that was managing him anymore. They released him. So now he fought a month and a half ago in Florida. Now his record went from 4-0, he's 5-0. I don't know when he's fighting again, but I know he's supposed to be fighting again soon.
So are you still working with him?
No, I'm not.
Now, Tyreen Manson, a woman who you're shown training in on the ropes, was about to fight in the Golden Gloves tournament when she was convicted on charges of selling crack. She maintained her innocence through the trial. And she, I believe, is still in prison?
Yes, she is.
She's serving how long of a sentence?
They gave her 4.5 years to 9. And she may be released on early work release in October.
I don't want to put you on the spot here, but do you believe that she was innocent?
Sure, I did. And I think the only reason why she went to prison is she wouldn't have never took the witness stand because they really didn't have nothing on her. You know what I'm saying? Because she didn't do nothing. I knew Tyreen. I knew the woman. I knew her very well. And I knew her situation at home. I knew the conditions of her living and everything else. And she was just trying to make all men's ends meet.
What kind of advice did you give her during her trial when she really wanted her mind to be in the ring because she was training for the Golden Gloves and yet she was facing this really important court battle? What did you tell her?
I tell her just stay calm and just relax and just believe in God and believe in yourself. And, but when Tyreen was so angry and so upset, she wanted to fight, and then when they did put her on the witness stand, she lost it, you know what I'm saying, because she was angry. She wanted to fight. So if you look at her in the trial on the witness stand, she was fighting with the DA. Then she had her fight because since she couldn't fight, since the DA wouldn't let her go fight in the ring, she took all her anger out on the DA, on the district attorney, and that's where she lost it at on the stand, by being angry, not because she was guilty.
And some of that is actually shown in the film On the Ropes. Is Tyreen Manson still training while she's in prison?
Yes, every day. I mean, every single day she trains. You know, every day I think she does so many thousands of push-ups. Because I went to visit her, and her stomach is, like, hard as a rock. Like, trying to bend a wall, you know. So, go out there, walking around 112 pounds. I mean, put on some, eat fast and gain some weight. Because when Tyreen get out, y'all have to watch out.
My guest Harry Kite is a boxing trainer at the Bed-Stuy Boxing Center in Brooklyn. He's at the center of the new documentary On the Ropes. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Harry Kite. He's a trainer at the Bedford-Stuyvesant Boxing Center, and he's the central figure in the new documentary On the Ropes. The film follows him and three of his boxers as the boxers prepare for the 1997 Golden Gloves tournament. Who trained you?
A man by the name of George Washington.
And what did you like him a lot?
Oh, George was like a father. He was like the father I never had because, you know, as a kid I never saw my father. So George, he made me feel like I could knock the world down. He made me feel like I can go up against an army by myself. When George was in my corner, I mean, George got this kind of voice that, you know, even if I got beat the first round, and the second round I came out, and sometimes I just knocked the guy out because he made me feel like I can just knock out King Kong. He's just a guy. I mean, because he got this grabber type voice that, come on, Harry, you can knock this kid out. You know, just walk him, just walk to him, stalk him, and walk him down. And 9 times out of 10, I did that.
What did you have the most trouble with when you were fighting?
Myself. Myself, hanging out and, you know, doing drugs, smoking weed and stuff like that. I mean, like, all the stuff that I asked of my kid, you know what I'm saying, I didn't do when I was a fighter. And that's why I ask so much of the kids that I train, because a lot of stuff I know I lack, and a lot of stuff I didn't do when I was a fighter, so... Now, I ask more of them than I ask of myself at the time when I was a fighter.
Could your trainer tell when you were doing drugs?
Sure, he knew. But, see, he knew the certain thing that if, from being a fighter or for being anything, you know when a person is doing whatever. You know what I mean? I can tell when a person is not running. I can tell when a person basically almost having sex or anything, because I can tell by their legs. I can tell how they are breathing. You know, I can tell by anything what they're doing and what they're not doing.
Now, I understand you don't get paid for your work as a trainer.
Nah, I would like to, but, you know, at the gym I just happen to work at is a non-profit organization. You know what I'm saying? We don't get no kind of profit. We don't get nothing from nobody. We are able to work because we have dedicated trainers that put their time and their efforts into the gym. And into the kids, and we don't get. And so, like, sometimes when you do bring up somebody that's great, that's good, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you do want to go along with that person. You want to be with that person. And
you want to share in their success, both
sure,
the glory
sure,
of because, it and the money of it.
Because you shared in bringing them up, you know? You brought them up from nothing. You know what I'm saying? So you should have the right to go the rest of the way with that person.
So how do you make a living if you're not getting paid for the boxing?
Oh, right now I work at a club in Manhattan. I'm a bouncer, you know. And I'm looking to get another job soon. I'm doing construction work, but right now I'm a bouncer working 3 days a week, and I'm at the gym 6 days a week. You know, some days I'd be so tight, but I'm saying, because I know when George was doing it, because at the time when I was a fighter. Joe, I was to be the last fight because I was a heavyweight, and Joe wouldn't get home till like 2 o'clock in the morning out of Madison Square Garden. And he had to be to work 6 o'clock in the morning in New Jersey, and so you know that's where I get my strength from.
What kind of music is it at the club?
They play 80s music in Manhattan. They play music from the 80s, but it's crowded all the time and stuff like that. It's a good club, you know. But for me as a person, I like to work. I'm an early morning guy, and I can't sleep in the daytime. And I'm an early morning guy. I like to, you know, get up like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. Those are my hours because, you know, as a fighter, I used to get up like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning to go do road work. So I'm an early morning person. I'm not the kind of person that lay in bed all day. And I don't like laying in bed, so I like to get up early in the morning, do what I got to do, and that's it.
What's the greatest success any of your boxers have gone on to?
Oh, I have a fighter right now. He's 16 years old. He's number one in the world. A fighter by the name of Mark Anin. He's number one in the world right now.
Number one among?
The junior, he's 16 years old. This is his last year as a junior. He won the JO Nationals in Marquette, Michigan, and he won the Junior Worlds in Mexico. So right now he's rated number one in the world.
And what are you hoping for him?
He's one of the kids that I don't have no problem about. He gets up and run. I mean, he does it all, you know. I tell him what to do, he just go out there and do it, and he tries his best because he liked the feeling of winning. He liked the feeling of raising his hands in the ring. And believe me, when he came in the gym, he was a fat little pudgy kid, and he was an underdog kid that then rose to the top, you know. But now he get great respect. He's one of them kids. He got an 80 average in school, and he works hard for what he wants, and he knows exactly what he wants. And he's one of them kids. He got his good hair on his shoulder. He's not in the street. I mean, a kid like that, you would want him for a son.
Harry Kite, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And good luck to you.
All right.
Harry Kite is a trainer at the Bed-Stuy Boxing Center. He's featured in the new documentary On the Ropes, directed by Nanette Burstein and Brett Morgan. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.